This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. This year's Academy Awards was unlike any other in history for at least two reasons. The first and most important reason was that more African Americans won awards on Sunday than ever before. The second reason was that there was a major snafu over who won the most coveted award of the night, Best Picture. La La Land, which had snagged a historic number of nominations, was favored to win and did get announced as the winner of Best Picture. But minutes later, it was determined that the announcers mistakenly read the wrong envelope and that it was Moonlight that won instead. La La Land's main cast members were largely white, while Moonlight has a black ensemble cast. For the past 2 years, the Academy has faced serious accusations of being too white. The nation's most high-profile film awards ceremony came just days after UCLA's Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies released its annual Hollywood Diversity Report, which found that people of color are still not well enough represented in the hugely influential industry. Joining me now is Darnell Hunt. He is a chair of the UCLA Department of Sociology and director of the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies at UCLA. He's also a professor of sociology and African American Studies there. Welcome to the program, Darnell.
Hi, Sonali.
Hi, thanks so much for joining us. Before we get into the diversity report, let's talk about how important Sunday night's Oscars were. First of all, even just in the nominations for films, for best actor, actress, supporting actor and actress, did you find there was more diversity, specifically more representation of Black actors and filmmakers than before?
Oh, absolutely. It was a monumental Academy Awards telecast. I mean, the nominations this year were light years ahead of what we've seen the last few years with Oscar so white. I mean, I should say that it's great that all of these African Americans were nominated for acting roles, for screenplay, for directing. Unfortunately, other underrepresented groups still are missing, you know, in terms of the Oscars. We didn't see any Latino nominees in the major categories, Asian Americans, Native Americans, God forbid, are virtually invisible. So we've made some progress, but there's just so much further we have to go.
Right. I mean, I believe Dave Patel as nominee for Best Supporting Actor was one glimpse of an Asian face, but yeah. That was about it. How important was it for someone like a Viola Davis to win an Academy Award? She, I understand now, is the first Black woman to have ever won an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony.
Well, she's such an amazing actress. I mean, you know, Emmy Award a few years back, the Oscar, the Tony. You know, she's like Meryl Streep. I mean, she's just such a performer. It's amazing and it's well-deserved. It's long overdue. So I'm happy to see her win that award. I mean, if you think of a film like Moonlight, for example, Best Picture, Best Screenplay, you know, it was a Black ensemble cast, as you said, but it was also edited by a Black woman. You know, so, I mean, it really does, you know, encapsulate in one project the potential and really the missed opportunities in the past to tell these types of stories and to have people of color involved in front of the camera and behind the camera.
I think that's a really important point because, for example, a film like Hidden Figures, which was also a really fantastic film, did get some Oscar attention, has become, you know, grossed more ticket sales than even La La Land, but it was a white filmmaker, which is fine, except that when you have a film like Moonlight, where there are African Americans both on screen and off screen, it does matter, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that is the great frontier that we still have to kind of deal with in Hollywood. I mean, to the extent that we've had progress, it's largely been in front of the camera. There hasn't been nearly as much progress behind the camera. This is true in television as well. And that's important because that's where the ideas are sort of generated. That's where the characters are sketched. That's where, you know, all of the things that are likely to result in who gets cast are done behind the camera, in the executive suites, for example. So, you know, to the extent that we're not making movement there, you know, we're tinkering around the margins, and every once in a while we have a good year like we had this year with some diverse nominations and award winners, but we're not really changing the way Hollywood does business on a day-to-day basis.
And of course, I want to get to that because that is the most important question. But staying on the Oscars for a bit, Moonlight was also distinguished by the fact that it was a low-budget film.
Absolutely.
It was made for something like $5 million or less, which is unheard of in Hollywood. What does that tell us about the importance of diversity on screen and the fact that you don't need a huge budget to make good films?
Well, the one thing that our study shows, the Hollywood Diversity Report series, and we've seen this year in, year out now, is that if you look at return on investment, you know, how much is spent on a film versus how much it makes, diverse films, on average, do a lot better than some of these major box office tentpole films that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make. And, you know, they make a lot of money, but if you look at how much money they make relative to what it costs to make them, you know, you're not getting the same type of return. So what this says to me, and I think what it should say to Hollywood, is there are all these stories out there that aren't being told that increasingly diverse audiences want to see. And right now, people of color make up about 40% of our population, and they also buy more movie tickets per capita than do whites. So there's this, you know, amazing amount of money that's being left on the table because the industry is just not structured to produce for diverse audiences what they really want.
Right. Let's talk about the very embarrassing flub that happened at the end of Oscar night. You know, the whole award ceremony is a build up to who wins Best Picture. La La Land was a favored film. You know, most of us expected it would win, even right. if we might have thought deep down inside it wasn't good enough. And then it was announced as having won, only to, in the middle of the filmmakers giving their acceptance speeches, us finding out that that was actually a mistake. That moment was very cringeworthy, Darnell, because, of course, the issue of race is one that Hollywood is so uncomfortable with. And to find out that a black film like Moonlight did actually win and had their moment of glory marred by this snafu, was that symbolic, highly symbolic for you, that moment?
It was an amazing moment, and in many ways quite apropos, because Moonlight was an amazing film, a great film, and deserved everything it got. But in some ways, having it, you know, sort of unfold the way it did, for me, really underscores the problem with Hollywood. Mm. I mean, the thing that really sticks in my mind is the imagery. You had the cast and crew of La La Land up on the stage, you know, excited, you know, accepting the award, a largely white sort of scene. And then suddenly, when the mistake was noticed and they brought out the cast and crew of Moonlight, it's an all black scene. So like this huge transformation, like within a few seconds, really kind of illustrates what Hollywood is typically like and what was so unusual and sort of groundbreaking about this particular film.
Glenn Lovell in the LA Times wrote in early February this really bizarre op-ed entitled, "Will the Political Climate Deprive La La Land of the Best Picture Oscar?" It was just a remarkable article where basically he dismissed so-called issue-oriented movies like Moonlight, presumably, as winning because it's more politically correct for that to happen, and that La La Land would lose, the implication is, even though it might have more merit. What do you make of this, you know, the fact that La La Land might have been deprived of its deserved Oscar in the eyes of someone like Glenn Lovell?
You know, the argument is nonsense. I mean, it's kind of like the backlash we saw last year when all of a sudden, white actors and other talent complaining that they're losing roles to actors of color after, you know, actors of color for generations being virtually, you know, absent altogether from film and television. I mean, it's just nonsense. I mean, you know, Moonlight was an exceptional film and, you know, by any measure deserved to win. You know, the fact that it also, you know, happened to resonate with important political issues that we've been talking about the industry, that's just a coincidence in many ways. I mean, it was an amazing film.
At the same time, it should be mentioned that La La Land was seen as this kind of film that was a reflection of Hollywood, that naturally the Academy yeah. would pick a film like that because in the end, it's a story about two people who put self-interest over love, over, you know, say more noble, grander issues. They choose to pursue their career in, you know, a sort of marginally narcissistic way, and that much of the academy might relate to that story.
Well, absolutely. La La Land was the type of film that Hollywood typically celebrates because Hollywood celebrates itself. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why it was the favorite. I mean, it was a good film. But, you know, I think Moonlight is just, it's amazing in its uniqueness. The fact that you're dealing with this fresh story that doesn't typically make it to the big screen, and it's done in such an amazing way. The performances are so good. The writing was so crisp. I mean, it was just, I remember being blown away when I saw the film. And I thought at the time, I said, you know, this is an Oscar contender.
Right. Also, I mean, just going back to La La Land, the fact that this was a film that kind of tried to revive the nostalgia of the 1950s, which was a terrible period for people of color in Hollywood. and actually, socially speaking, it was a terrible time for people of color, in particular African-Americans. That was also a really interesting point, as well as the fact that Ryan Gosling plays a white person, is a white person who plays a person who is trying to save jazz.
Right. But no. You know, La La Land was your typical paint by the numbers Hollywood type of film that typically wins in these situations. Yeah. For me, it was a perfect reflection of how the industry is typically structured. You have white men who make all the decisions, and when they do gesture toward diversity, they decide how it's going to be done. So in this case, you have the white man saving jazz or bringing jazz in and celebrating jazz, as opposed to the people who are the originators of jazz having that type of creative role. So, John Legend, of course, is involved in the project, and I think that's important. But it was your typical mainstream Hollywood film. And unfortunately, most of those films in the past have excluded people of color and women from major creative positions. And Moonlight, I think, was sort of a sign of things to come. I think where the industry really has to move if it's going to better serve what the audience has become and is increasingly becoming.
From Moonlight, Mahershala Ali won Best Supporting Actor, which was very significant in that he, I understand, became the first Muslim actor to win this award.
Absolutely.
At a time when Muslims are the most targeted group of the White House today. How important was that? And also, how important is his own personal story?
No, it was huge. I mean, he's an amazing actor, too. I mean, just if you think about the things he's done in the last, 10 years, I mean, it's just, you know, amazingly accomplished actor and long overdue to get this recognition. And I think the fact that he is Muslim and African-American, I mean, combined, I mean, really speaks volumes for, you know, the notion of our culture being more inclusive and all of our stories being told.
Darnell, how important is it for us to have this conversation? I know that at a time when so much is happening politically, that people might dismiss the conversation that you and I are having as being trite and trivial. But what we see on our screen, doesn't that hugely influence our culture and vis-a-vis that, our political climate?
Well, I'm a sociologist, and the reason I study media and Hollywood in particular is not because I'm a fan. It's because we know that media matter. We know that images matter. It's not just entertainment. It is entertaining. But at the end of the day, media normalize. That is to say, when we see something over and over again in the media, we begin to take it for granted, and it becomes sort of the view that we have of the world. And one of the things we know about media in particular is that when groups don't have a lot of face-to-face contact with other groups, a lot of what they think they know about those groups come from the images they see in media. This is one of the reasons why immigrants can come to this country and think that they already know everything there is to know about African-Americans, for example, because of all the images that we export around the world of African-Americans, many of them stereotypical. So I think media and the images that we show are absolutely critical. And that's why it's so important that people of color and women need to be in control of their own images. They need to show the humanity of different groups. They need to show the range of experiences that exist within a group. It's not like all Black people are the same, all Asian Americans are the same, et cetera. And so all of those stories and their very nuance need to be told. And so what we're talking about right now is absolutely essential. the Academy is recognizing the pinnacle of achievement. And if certain types of stories and voices are missing from that recognition, then we have a problem.
And then that Academy itself becomes less and less relevant. And in fact, has there been a demographic shift among Academy members over the past year since last year's Oscar so white controversy? And if so, do you see this year's results reflected in the demographic change at the level of voting members?
Well, you know, I've been asked this question a lot, and, you know, it's not like there's a single cause as to why we got the progress we got this year at the Oscars. I think there are multiple things going on. You cannot discount the Oscars So White movement. That played a major role, and if nothing else, just sensitizing members of the Academy who traditionally have been mostly male, mostly white, and older. Sensitize them to kind of what they were missing. You know, I would bet that most members of the Academy this year were probably a lot more diligent at actually watching the screeners. I mean, I can imagine in years past that the screener for Moonlight probably wouldn't have been watched by a lot of people in the Academy. They probably watched it and discovered that, hey, this is a great little film, you know. And so I think that kind of put Moonlight on the map in a particular way. The fact that this criticism existed probably sensitized movie critics to really taking a hard look at Moonlight, because as you know, it was critically acclaimed from the very beginning and picked up a lot of steam throughout award season. So I think all of those things play into why a film like this, you know, could topple the favorite, you know, La La Land, which is a typical type of film that the Academy would have celebrated and recognized in the past.
Darnell, let's talk about what you found in the Hollywood Diversity Report released by the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies that you direct. This was the fourth year in a row this covered, and it's a very comprehensive report because it covers theatrical releases, but also broadcast, cable, and digital platform television shows, with digital platforms, of course, being more important than ever these days. Let's focus on the film industry, since this is also a discussion about the Oscars. First of all, when we talk about wanting to see more people of color in front of our screen, how much of a reflection is that of demographic shifts, you know, because when we say we have a minority in a particular country, it's not that we want a group that's, say, 10% of the population to have 50% of the roles in TV. Right. So how does diversity trends match diversity trends on screen match diversity trends in the population?
So what we do in our report series, and it's sort of the most comprehensive study of this type of thing, and what we try to do is give the bird's eye view of what's happening. So in television, for example, we look at all 1,200 TV shows in a given season. In film, we look at the top 200 films ranked by box office, and then we subtract out foreign films to see how Hollywood does. And so in our most recent report, we're looking at films that were released in 2015. So we're always about a year behind. And the films that we looked at this year in the 2017 report were the films that were being considered for Oscar last year, you know, during Oscar So White. So I just want to make that point clear. But what we find is that, you know, if you think that, you know, minorities are roughly 40% of the population as they were in 2015, and their share of the population is growing by about 0.5% a year, you know, to reach proportionate representation, they, you know, should account for roughly 40% of the roles, 40% of the talent behind the camera, et cetera. So what we do is we look at every arena in film, in front of the camera, behind the camera, you know, lead actors, overall cast diversity, directors, writers, et cetera. And we look at this standard of, you know, how far does minority representation differ from the 40% threshold or that 40% standard. And what we find is that on every front, minorities, and I should add women, are underrepresented in film. In fact, they have an incredibly long way to go, which really shouldn't be surprising given Oscar So White the last few years. But even this year, I mean, we don't have data yet for the 2016 film season, but I don't expect to see, despite these nominations, any major move forward in terms of, you know, what Hollywood's done in film, just because we know how the industry is structured, who's making the decisions about what gets green lighted with what type of budget, etc. We're talking about white men for the most part, who are prone to green light films like La La Land with pretty big budgets and to make those types of films, and are much less likely to support a film like Moonlight, it required, you know, Brad Pitt's, you know, company to kind of, you know, support it along with others to bring something like this to the small screen. And that said, it was a relatively small budget film, as you noted, about $5 million that so far made about $25 million. So the return on investment is great. And it's probably going to make a lot more money now that it's been recognized with the Oscar.
So this is the fourth annual report. Over the years, have you seen a trend going in a positive direction, or are the differences just too small, both on the issue of racial diversity and gender diversity? Are you seeing even marginal increases in representation?
In film, we're basically treading water as it relates to minorities. I mean, you know, it goes up and down, maybe a percentage point, half a percentage point over the 4 years. Women, however, we did note in this report, made some pretty significant gains among directors, which, you know, traditionally has been one of the worst arenas for women. I mean, women directors are, you know, very rare, which is one of the reasons why a couple of years ago, when Ava DuVernay directed Selma, a film that was critically acclaimed, but yet wasn't even nominated for Best Director Oscar, was such a travesty. You know, it's rare to have a woman director of a major film, and even rarer yet to have a woman of color. So that was quite a snub. I believe women were about 7.7% of the directors of the 168 films we looked at, the top films in 2015.
Oh my God! Wait, less than 10%. I mean, we're talking about gender here. So, you know, we're talking about needing at least 50% representation, because usually the women's population compared to men is a little over 50%. Exactly. And you're saying only about 7%?
Well, before that, it was about 4.5%. So in fact, over the 4 years, their share almost doubled to 7.5%. I mean, 7.7%. So, I mean, that just shows you how bad it was for women as directors, you know. But on every front, you know, you name it, lead actors, directors, writers, women and people of color have been underrepresented in film. And, you know, 3-to-1 among film leads for minorities, 2-to-1 among women. And in many cases, they went backwards between our 2016 and 2017 report. Again, by only a percentage point or two. But still, the point is, we're not really making significant progress. And we're already well behind the eight ball.
Is there a difference between film versus television? Is there a difference within television in terms of which platform?
Yeah, well, definitely TV. I mean, TV, we're in something of a golden age right now. And what I mean by that is that we're making more original TV than at any point in history. It's not even close. So we had 1,200 and something TV shows we looked at in our 2017 report. Across, you know, 6 broadcast networks, 60-something cable networks, and a dozen or more digital platforms. And it should be noted that Netflix is making more original programming now than anybody. And that wasn't the case a few years ago. So TV, as we know, is really shifting. And because there's just so much space to fill, because there's so much original programming, it's almost like they can't go back to the same 15 white guys over and over again. So they've actually created opportunities for people of color, for the Issa Raes and Donald Glovers, you know, with, you know, Atlanta and Insecure, to create these shows and to actually star in these shows and to tell stories that typically we wouldn't see. So we're beginning to see that have an impact in TV. Again, we still have a long way to go, but the only place in our report where there's really, you know, sign of good news is in broadcast TV, where you really do see, you know, increases for minorities among leads, among show creators, among writers. I mean, the trend line is pretty obvious from 2014, when we did our first report, to this last report in 2017. But pretty much in every other arena, we're either treading water, or in some places we're going backwards.
So on the issue of seeing better bang for your buck, if you will, which you referred to earlier, if you were to give advice to Hollywood, which I'm sure you're asked too often, said, you know, if Hollywood can't, for moral reasons, increase racial and gender diversity, I'm sure they might listen to the bottom line reason. Did your report look at how well these films do financially compared to diversity, both behind the camera and in front of it?
Absolutely. So when we conceived of this study about 10 years ago, we spent a lot of time doing our homework, talking with stakeholders in the industry as to what would it take to really move the football down the field. And people have been making the moral argument since the NAACP launched their campaign against Birth of a Nation back in 1915. I mean, you know, this is a longstanding issue because people realize that media images matter in terms of the impact they have on the way different groups are perceived. So we said, okay, you know, once we talked to people in the industry, they said, well, you know, Hollywood's the only color that really matters is green. It's about the bottom line. It's about making money. If you can show that diversity sells, then, you know, the industry is more likely to listen. So we put that to the test, and we designed our study to explicitly explore the relationships between diversity in front of the camera, behind the camera, and the bottom line. And so what this means in TV, of course, is ratings, and in film, it means box office. And so I had mentioned earlier that we looked at the top 200 films ranked by box office. That wasn't accidental, because we wanted to look at box office receipts relative to you know, how diverse those films were in terms of their overall cast diversity. And what we found now 4 years in a row is that films that tend to look like America in terms of racial and ethnic diversity, on average, are the films that have the highest box office. And we find the same thing in television. TV shows that are relatively diverse, in fact, even more so in TV, on average have the highest ratings. And again, we find this year in, year out. And it stands to reason. The audience, again, is about 40% minority, and we know that minorities buy more movie tickets per capita and watch more TV. So in many ways, you can say that the minority audience is almost about half of the audience right now. And people want to see their stories told. They want to see characters they can identify with and relate to. And if you put those characters into movies and TV shows, you're going to attract audience viewers. I mean, you know, diverse audience viewers. It just remains to be seen.
Well, I certainly tend to find myself becoming increasingly bored of all white films. I'm just, you know, I'm done with it. I've consumed more than my fair share of white stories. Finally, I want to ask your reflections on the idea that you and I are having a conversation about Hollywood being so resistant to change, and, you know, really having to be dragged, kicking and screaming toward better racial and gender representation. Meanwhile, you have a sector of American society that from the outside dismisses Hollywood as being, you know, a tool of liberal elites, being composed of liberal elites. There was a tiny protest outside the Oscars by Trump supporters that wants entertainers to focus on entertaining and not on politics. What do you make of that debate?
Well, it's like a contemporary manifestation of the culture wars that we saw during the Reagan-Bush years, where there's an attempt to vilify anything that's forward-looking, that's reflective of where the nation actually is and going, as sort of in favor of returning back to this so-called idyllic past, which, of course, was very exclusionary for people of color and women. So it's part of a sort of an ideological strategy. I mean, you know, the irony, of course, is that, you know, Hollywood thinks of itself as liberal. And in fact, you know, they tend to vote Democratic and support liberal causes. But as an industry, it's structured in a way to reproduce exclusion of the very groups that they claim to, you know, support. So this is one of the, I guess, major disconnects about the Hollywood industry that we talk about in our report. And what it really boils down to, I think, is this conflict of different levels of interest between individual white men who tend to hold the power and hold these positions and to make projects like La La Land that they're comfortable with, they're familiar with, and they're good at making. I mean, you know, La La Land's a good film. But unfortunately, it's not the type of film that increasingly America's diverse audiences want and need to see. And the people who run things in Hollywood, they're in very lucrative positions. They don't want to give up the power and bring people and voices into the room that don't look like them, that they maybe aren't comfortable with, they haven't worked with in the past, i.e. people of color and women. And so they're, you know, typically on the outside looking in as opposed to making these decisions. And we get the same sort of outcomes over and over again. So I see kind of the Trump administration and kind of, you know, the other sort of this divide, this cultural divide that we're dealing with in America right now, as a critical issue, obviously. And I think that those who are supporters of Trump, they're trying to do anything they can to sort of undermine the values and the perspective that are more consistent with an inclusive America in their efforts to kind of turn back the clock and move us back in time. And I think culture is a huge part of that, which is why they have to criticize this movement toward more inclusion in Hollywood.
Darnell, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll post a link to the Hollywood Diversity Report from our website later today as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Darnell Hunt is chair of the UCLA Department of Sociology. He's also director of the Ralph J. Bunche Center for African American Studies at UCLA, where he's a professor of sociology and African American studies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, and you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.